Oh, there you have Reverend Gary Davis pleasing the crowd with a little song called Baby Let Me Lay It On You. That's from a Shaughnessy record called Blues and Ragtime from Reverend Gary Davis. We also heard from Lead Belly back there, 1946. That was Digging My Potatoes from a disc called Bourgeois Blues. I swear it must have been Sonny Terry in the background just singing along with Lead Belly back in the day. All right, we've got time for just a few more tracks before we head on out in this hour of the Deep Blues Hour. We're going to hear from Smokey Hog next. This is I Want a Roller. Yeah, Smokey Hog here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Won't be back no more. Further down the road, baby, you reach just what you sow. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop my show. I help you, baby, you couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet, you're helping somebody else. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop for Sonny Show.
I took you in, baby. You couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet. You're helping somebody else, I got to tell you. But that's all right. I want you to know. One market, don't stop my show.
We start today in Argentina, where Trumpian far-right candidate Javier Milei has become the next president of Argentina. As many of you know, I was born in Argentina, have family, friends there. And as is often the case in Argentina, in last night's runoff, both options were terrible. I don't even want to say bad and even worse, because I don't know which one is even worse. One who would definitely continue destroying the country, and the other who almost certainly would continue destroying the country. Let's discuss what happened. As some of you know, because you saw it on the bonus show, Argentina had its initial presidential election in October. Failing to secure a majority, the top two candidates went into a runoff, which took place yesterday. And with almost all of the votes counted, as BBC reports, the right winger, Javier Milei, 56%, his left wing rival, Sergio Massa, with 44%. This guy, Milei, is sort of the kind of cult-like, you know, there's a cult of personality around him. He is Trump-like in that way. He is Trump-like in that we have seen right-wing media figures like Tucker Carlson make their pilgrimages to him in Argentina in the same way that they did to Trump. This guy is genuinely nuts, but the alternative, Massa, which would have been a continuation of the failed Kirchner-style regimes, would also have been a disaster. The options were, and it's a horrible situation in Argentina, it really is, triple-digit inflation, no path out of the economic disaster that has been taking place there for so long. The options were Sergio Massa, which would have continued the corruption and self-enrichment and failed policies that led to this hyperinflation. That's one option, saying you made it a disaster, let's reward you by electing another one of your candidates. Or a cartoonish far-right lunatic who says he's going to dollarize the economy in a way that no economist says is possible is doing the Republican type thing of saying, I'm going to eliminate 10 entire departments. We'll get to that in a moment. So bad no matter what. Now, was there a reasonable candidate? I mean, listen, the standards are very different. But in my view, the kind of reasonable candidate, less overtly corrupt and less obviously insane, was a sort of Romney-esque center-right candidate, Bullrich, who came in third place in the general election, ultimately endorsed Milei, which, you know, the guy's out of his mind. So as usual, mediocre and terrible options for people to choose from. And this is almost certainly not going to go well. Here is, to give you a sense of this guy, here is Milei completely losing his mind on stage. Screaming liberty. And I mean, his dancing makes Trump look completely normal. Here is the style video that Milei put out during his campaign. And again, this is very Trump-like, listing entire departments that he would eliminate. Okay, so he says, Ministry of Sports and Tourism, done. Ministry of Culture, done.
Ministerio de Ambiente y Desarrollo Sostenible, afuera.
Yeah, Environment and Sustainable Development, out. So this is the Trump-like thing where they go, we don't need the Department of Education, we don't need the EPA, we don't need all of this sort of stuff.
Ministerio de las Mujeres y Género y Diversidad, afuera. Ministerio de Obras Públicas.
So Public Works Ministry, out. Ministry of, it was something like Women's... women's and gender diversity or something. It's all out. They're going to cancel everything. So this is going to, you know, the incredible thing about this is that we now are seeing the Trumpification of Latin America as well. We started seeing the reason this is relevant globally is that I have no delusions that Argentina is some kind of economic superpower. But we started to see the Trumpification of Europe years ago. And now we are seeing that it has reached Latin America. It has reached Argentina. So we will see what happens. They are going to make attempts, I guess, to do some of the things that he said he would do. He has this idea of dollarizing Argentina. Argentina's currency is the Argentinian peso, and it's increasingly worth less and less. It went from being worth toilet paper to being worth like used toilet paper and down from there. His idea is we will dollarize, meaning we will essentially just use the dollar, peg our currency to the dollar 1-to-1. This has been tried. It was tried in 2001 and it failed for a bunch of different reasons. You can find 10 different economists. They will have 10 slightly different explanations as to why it failed. But Argentina essentially gave up control of its currency. They were unable to adjust to economic mismatches with the United States by saying we're going to do a 1-to-1 with the U.S. It led to even more economic turmoil, public unrest, worsened the debt crisis. It didn't work. Milei's idea, as I understand it, and it's like a Jordan Peterson type cult around him, where if you explain that something he suggested doesn't make sense, his supporters come out of the woodwork and viciously tell you you're too stupid to understand his plan. Well, his plan is explained in a different way every time. But as I understand it, he would dollarize at half the current peso dollar exchange rate, which doesn't make any sense. And every serious economist I've read says it will not happen. It could not happen. So the Trumpification of Argentina, I'm expecting to be there in a few months, and we will see on the ground what it is that takes place. But very, very scary stuff. Nikki Haley continues to surge as Mike Pence has dropped out, as Tim Scott has dropped out. I believe that if it is not to be Donald Trump, Nikki Haley is the only serious Republican primary challenger remaining. Let's look at some of the numbers. As you can see here, Mike Pence is now gone from our chart, I guess we would call it. Tim Scott is still there and will soon be removed. The person who is benefiting from the ones and twos dropping out is Nikki Haley, who has now gone nearly 11x in her support, launching her campaign at 1%. She is now about to reach 11%, and she is positioned to take over the second place spot from Ron DeSanctimonious very, very soon. With the elimination of a number of candidates, Trump is still between 58 and 60. He's not gaining from these folks going away. DeSantis continues to be between 13 and 15. But it is Nikki Haley, who now you can see in the bottom right, the dark red line, continues to surge. Vivek Ramaswamy is dead in the water. Hilariously, last week when we interviewed Vivek, he said he's right where he wants to be at 4%. It's crazy. Anyway, so he's going to be allowed to stay there. That's for sure. But Ramaswamy's done at 4.7. Chris Christie has no shot. Tim Scott has dropped out. Everybody else is under 1%. So Nikki Haley is the one person positioned if something happens with Trump. What that would be, I don't know. He dies. He is so humiliated in court as his trials start that Republicans say, hey, this is kind of embarrassing. Let's vote for someone else. It is only Nikki Haley who I believe is in a position to do something here. Now, what about in early primaries? Well, if you look at the Iowa caucus polling, Nikki Haley is still in third place, but is very close to Ron DeSantis. 17-13, DeSantis is ahead of Haley. Of course, Trump at 47 in the state of Iowa. In New Hampshire, another early primary, Nikki Haley is actually in second place. DeSantis actually losing badly in New Hampshire. In New Hampshire, you have it as Trump 45, Haley 19 and surging, Chris Christie 11, and DeSantis 7. So one possible path forward for Nikki Haley that is being discussed is that she overperforms even these numbers in New Hampshire. Imagine for a moment that the polling is more or less like this. In fact, I think Nikki Haley will probably be in the 20s by the time this election happens because she is surging. But imagine that the polling going into the New Hampshire primary is, I don't know, call it Trump 42, Nikki Haley 21. And then imagine that Haley overperforms. And at the end of the day, it's Haley 27 and Trump 36. That is close enough to justify Nikki Haley staying in this race. We then would go to South Carolina, her home state. Now, again, as of this moment, Nikki Haley's in second place in South Carolina. It's Trump 49, Nikki Haley 19, DeSantis 10. However, that includes 9 points for Tim Scott, because we don't have polling from South Carolina yet that involves Tim Scott leaving the race. I would guess Nikki gets most of Tim Scott's support. They're both from South Carolina. Imagine that Nikki gets 7 of Scott's 9. That pushes her to 26. And if they go into this 49-26, she does well in New Hampshire. Maybe that pushes her to 33 and pulls Trump down to 37. Again, a strong showing from Nikki. Maybe she can justify staying in even further. This is the most optimistic scenario for Nikki Haley, but it's at least a path to something. Something that DeSantis doesn't have. He's getting crushed even in his home state of Florida, and something that none of the other Republican candidates have. Vivek is talking about, you know, we hope to finish in the top three in Iowa. Well, if you look at the polling, he's losing to Tim Scott, who's not even in this race anymore. So I don't see any path for anybody else. If I were a betting man, I'm still betting that Trump ultimately becomes the nominee. But if you want to make a case that anybody here should stay in, it's Nikki Haley. Let me know your thoughts. There has been one more Republican debate scheduled on early December. I think it's 2 weeks from now. December 6th, it will be a News Nation debate. My goal is to cover that. That will be, I really do think that will finally be the last debate. Trump not expected to appear. Let me know, do you see at least the hypothetical path for Nikki Haley that I see, or is it over? Let me know your thoughts. We'll take a quick break and the show continues. The David Pakman Show continues to be made possible by our audience. We have this thing called the membership program. And if you like this show, we provide more show to our members every single weekday. After the regular show, there's the bonus show where I am joined by producer Pat. We talk about more of the goings on in the United States and around the world. Lots of other great member perks and benefits. And you can sign up and avail yourself of all of it at joinpacman.com. Ron DeSantis is refusing to condemn Elon Musk's endorsement of a disgustingly anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. CNN's Jake Tapper interviewed Ron DeSantis, not exactly a profile in courage. Ron DeSantis taking the, I just haven't seen it, I don't know, but I know that Twitter has been treated very, very unfairly. We're going to take a look at a couple of clips. He insists that he hasn't seen it. And Jake Tapper shows it to him and he still goes, yeah, I just don't know. I don't know. Here's the first clip.
Something happened the other day that I wondered what you thought about, because you launched your campaign on Twitter, now known as X. And right now, major companies such as Apple and Disney are pulling their ads from X because Elon Musk openly endorsed this anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Jews are conspiring to replace white Americans with minority immigrants.
Right.
I wondered if you saw the comment and if you condemn it.
I did not see the comment. And so I know that Elon has had a target on his back.
He's the victim, guys. Elon's the victim.
Since he purchased Twitter, because I think he's taking it in a direction that a lot of people who are used to controlling the narrative don't like. I was a big supporter of him purchasing Twitter. I think they're obviously still working some stuff out, but I did not see those comments.
All right. Yep. They're working out whether it's a good look from the standpoint of retaining advertisers for the owner of the company to signal boost anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that date back essentially thousands of years in some way, shape or form. So here is Jake Tapper attempting again to get him to answer something about it.
So I do think on the institutional side, you've seen this become part of a left-wing movement, a very significant pro-Hamas movement, and it is backed by institutional power.
Yeah, absolutely. Jewish students, just like Muslim students, black students, gay students, all students should feel safe on campuses, and the concern Jewish students have right now is very serious. I'm just saying, Elon Musk is a pretty powerful guy, and he's out there endorsing some pretty hideous anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, and I still haven't heard you condemn it.
Well, because I haven't seen it. I know you tried to read. I have no idea what the context is. I know Elon Musk.
There could be context which would explain away arguing that such an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory was actually not an anti-Semitic thing to agree with. There could be missing context there. We need the context, as we know.
Never seen him do anything. I think he's a guy that...
All right. And something very, very extraordinarily glitchy here. Anyway, refusing to condemn him. So what exactly is going on here? There's two different things going on here. First of all, DeSantis has a campaign that is dead. And at this point, I really don't know that there's that much that you need to preserve by saying, oh, I don't know. I didn't see it. I don't condemn it. I don't know. The campaign is dead and there's no real utility to not answering. I guess maybe he thinks in some way staying on Elon Musk's good side is going to be helpful or something along those lines. As far as DeSantis being a complete and total coward when it comes to this sort of thing, that's not new. That shouldn't surprise us. You might remember that in January of last year, there were neo-Nazi demonstrators that were at DeSantis events. And DeSantis was just asked to condemn them. And he said that it was a way to smear him, to ask him to condemn it. Now, only if you are unwilling to condemn it, is that a way to smear you? You know, I every time this happens, I'm reminded of when I interviewed the white nationalist Richard Spencer. And I said to him, hey, I heard you don't condemn Adolf Hitler. Will you condemn Hitler? And he goes, oh, you know, I'm not going to play that game. And, you know, do you condemn this? Do you condemn that? I mean, David, do you condemn Pol Pot? And I said, yes, I do. I mean, it's not really a game. It's just the idea that it's a game or a smear to just say, hey, do you condemn this thing that's absolutely disgusting? That's a classic move from people who don't want to condemn absolutely horrible things. So no surprise there. And then maybe sort of lastly, we are going to talk at some point this week, maybe on the podcast, maybe on the bonus show, about what's going on with X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. Elon Musk has become Trump in a particular way, which is he is the ultimate victim. The new thing now is Elon Musk said he's going to be launching, I think he called it a thermonuclear lawsuit against, I'm not even sure who, I guess people that are smearing the platform as allowing disgusting content. He believes that all of these advertisers that are canceling are being lied to and sort of coerced or tricked into canceling ad campaigns. The reality is, if you look at what's happening on the platform, and I'm barely on it, I went on again yesterday to just sort of see like, what's on the platform? What am I missing by not really being on Twitch, on Twitter? And I saw nothing of value. The good stuff that's on there, I'm able to get elsewhere. And it's mostly a cesspool, signal boosting right-wing content, conspiracy theories, even ads for products that seem extraordinarily dishonest and immoral. So good luck to Elon Musk. I don't think that that lawsuit is going to get very far. Donald Trump spoke in Fort Dodge, Iowa over the weekend, and I have never seen such a humiliating event Trump talking about how he's not into being urinated on in a sexual manner. This is an allegation that continues to plague Trump, but he assures the crowd in Iowa he is not into it. This is not something that he is into. This is a former president, bright orange, talking about so-called golden showers in what was described as a high school gymnasium. Take a listen to this. Oh, boy. And the video is glitching. We're going to get it, I assure you.
He was with four hookers. You think that was good that night to go up and tell my wife, it's not true, darling. I love you very much. It's not true. Actually, that one she didn't believe because she said he's a germaphobe. He's not into that, you know? He's not into golden showers, as they say they call it. He's not. I don't like that idea. No, I didn't. I thought that would be a big problem. I was going to have a rough night, but that one she was very good on. She said, no.
Trump expected that it was going to be a really tough night with Melania because of the golden showers allegation. This is a 77-year-old former president of the United States. This is what he has been reduced to talking about on the world stage of his 2024 campaign. You know, one thing that is a bad idea for Trump to be talking about is taking over the Capitol again after what happened on January 1st of 2021. Trump shouldn't be talking about taking over the Capitol, but he's talking again about taking over the Capitol.
And clean up, renovate, and rebuild our capital city so that it no longer is a nightmare of murder and crime. Last night, three people were killed. But rather, it will become the most beautiful capital anywhere in the world. We're going to take over the Capitol, and we're going to make it beautiful, and we're going to make it safe. We're going to make it great.
Well, you know, the last time Trump and his supporters took over the Capitol, it was a really bad thing. This is not the line that I would be going with. Donald Trump explaining that he had a disease named after him, so-called Trump derangement syndrome.
We can't. Every sane person without what they call Trump derangement syndrome, you know what that is? It's a great honor. I had a disease named after me. Trump derangement syndrome wants to get back to how great we had it under the Trump administration. We had.
There are other diseases that come to mind when I think of Donald Trump, but this is not a medical show, so we're not going to dig into that. Almost reflexively, Donald Trump again talking about the fierce and strong nature of the Chinese dictatorial authoritarian leader, President Xi. He just can't seem to get away from being enamored with this guy.
To do. He walked up with a man who looks like a piece of granite, right? He's strong like granite. He's strong. I know him very well. President Xi of China. And he's standing there. You know, he's a fierce person. Now, the press doesn't like it when I say good things about it, but, you know, what can I say? He runs 1.4 billion people.
What can I say? I'm enamored with the guy. We have love letters.
With an iron hand. And they say, oh, he said good things about him. No, he happens to be a very smart person. If I say a certain leader is smart, that's controlling a big part of the world, the press gets upset that I say smart because that's a good thing. No, no. Very smart people. These are very smart people. But they're dealing with very stupid people.
Right.
Our leader is a stupid person. Our leader.
Nothing more American than insulting the president of the United States while calling the authoritarian leader of China strong like granite and very smart. Remember, America first. Don't forget, America first. Donald Trump attempting to take credit for getting a whole bunch of different people elected in Iowa. The problem with the story you're about to hear is it doesn't match up with the facts, which will not come as a shock to many.
They get a lot. I got a lot of guys elected right here, including Grassley, who was having a problem, and including Joni Ernst, who had a big problem. Could you do, sir, a rally for me in Iowa? Absolutely. You think it's easy to come all the way from wherever the hell I am and do a rally in front? I got him elected. Remember that.
The only problem with this story is that the more Trump helped Chuck Grassley, the smaller and smaller the share of the vote that Grassley got was. Grassley in 2010, pre-Trump, got 64% of the vote. In 2016, he got 60% of the vote. And with Trump's help in 2022, he got only 56% of the vote. So it appears as though Trump is hurting Chuck Grassley, not helping Chuck Grassley. Trump touting some kind of book, I guess. And any time Trump talks about books, it's funny because Trump doesn't read.
Something that's great. They want me to tell you to go out and sign up. We have a book here, beautiful book. Look at this book, how beautiful that is, see? You read pictures, but it basically...
You can read the pictures.
...is you sign up and you become a caucus or something.
You can become... Okay, so Trump talking about, I guess, the caucus book. And then finally, Trump unable to get out of the high school gym in Fort Dodge, Iowa, without hitting the issue of trans athletes. As we know, the foremost issue on the minds of Americans.
Now, the whole thing is crazy. The swimmers are being, the records are being broken at levels. And, you know, it's very demeaning to women, actually.
Right.
Very demeaning to women. But I love women athletes. I love women athletes. But they shouldn't be allowed. I think it's dangerous in many cases. And in some cases, it's just unfair. The sad part is that a lot of women, they know this, and they don't want to talk about it because, you know, we're in like this communist regime nowadays. We are not allowed to speak the truth on elections. Yep. Or on things like that.
As you know, Trump's speech has been so limited over the last many years. Trump doesn't really give a speech. He kind of tells imaginary stories, some of them off of his teleprompter, that paint a picture of a completely imaginary alternate reality that doesn't really exist. That is exactly what Trump did in a high school gym in Iowa over the weekend. And stunningly, people are still going and showing up to this stuff and waiting all day to hear from the guy. Donald Trump lost it over the weekend when he learned that Joe Biden is not going to be criminally charged for his classified documents situation. This really triggered Donald Trump. I will tell you a little bit about what we learned. Trump reacts in disgust after Biden sees no charges in documents case. Biden is expected to face a critical report over his handling of some documents, but no charges in that special counsel probe into the handling of classified documents. Donald Trump taking to Truth Social.
Truth Central.
And posting in all capital letters, quote, "Wow, fake news CNN through a leak from the Department of Injustice has just reported that no charges will be filed in the much bigger than mine crooked Joe Biden documents case. We are living in a very corrupt country." Now, I find it as entertaining as the next guy or gal that Donald Trump is so wildly triggered by the fact that Joe Biden isn't going to be facing charges. Now, the story that Trump is telling and other Republicans are telling is that this is because the charges against Trump are completely trumped up, for lack of a better term, by a politically biased Justice Department at the direction of Joe Biden. The reality is that there are some critical material differences between Trump's classified document situation and that of Joe Biden. First and foremost, Trump says Biden's case is way bigger than Trump's. That is a lie by any stretch of how you might measure it. First of all, Trump's case involves documents with highly sensitive national security information. Joe Biden's case involves a small number of documents with classified markings not relevant to national security information. The number of documents is staggering when it comes to Trump and not when it comes to Joe Biden. But the most important thing here is that Trump went out of his way not to turn over the documents to authorities and to obstruct the investigation into the documents. This includes everything from directing documents be moved. There was a wild, suspicious flood of the room where the documents were kept. We still don't know was that on purpose or not. It all stinks to high heaven. Trump telling his lawyers say things that aren't true about the documents. On the other hand, Joe Biden immediately reported the discovery of these documents, promptly turned them over, and completely cooperated with authorities. Trump went out of his way to do the opposite. There is almost no similarity between the two cases. It is not for me to judge when are charges appropriate. The investigators have determined that charges are not appropriate when it comes to Joe Biden. If someone else can present actual evidence for why there should be charges, I'm glad to look at it. I have not seen it thus far, and it is sending Trump for a loop. 2024 Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley came up with an idea when it comes to social media that some are absolutely crushing her for. But in reality, there are many people on the left who have already proposed such an idea. Some on the right have as well. People like social psychologist Jonathan Haidt have talked about this. So I want to discuss it in some depth. Nikki Haley's idea here is that everyone on social media must provide proof of identification. Take a listen to what she had to say. This is from Fox News over the weekend.
When I get into office, the first thing we have to do, social media accounts, social media companies, they have to show America their algorithms. Let us see why they're pushing what they're pushing. The second thing is every person on social media should be verified by their name. That's, first of all, it's a national security threat. When you do that, all of a sudden, people have to stand by what they say, and it gets rid of the Russian bots, the Iranian bots, and the Chinese bots. And then you're going to get some civility when people know their name is next to what they say.
Accountability.
And they know their pastor and their family member is going to see it. It's going to help our kids, and it's going to help our country.
Now, Nikki Haley is correctly identifying an absolute and total reality about social media. Many people would never say on social media the things that they say. The messages I get, I believe, what, 90, 95, 98% of the truly sick and disgusting messages that I get, I don't believe I would get if people knew that it was known who they were. Now, there are some really important differences between how such a plan could be put in place. And this is where I think a bunch of the controversy is. What Jonathan Haidt has proposed is that individuals can't be anonymous to the platform. You're allowed to use a pseudonym. And some of the right wingers that flipped out about this and left wingers said, you know, what if you're a victim of some crime and you're posting about it? Or what if you are an intelligence person who just wants to privately have an account? Why should you need to post under your real name? There's two versions of this. One version of this is you have to post under your real name. Another is to have an account, you have to verify your identity to the platform, but you can still use a pseudonym. So in other words, if I wanted to post under, you know, I don't know, Tom Brady 7859246, I could do that. But when I register, I have to prove my real identity to the platform. And then if I do something illegal or whatever, the platform would know who I am. Now, there's a difference between those two things, and there's also a difference between government requiring platforms to do this sort of verification versus platforms deciding for themselves that it's something they want to do. So there's two options there, two options on pseudonyms. This gives us like a 2x2 grid, as it were, of how something like this could be implemented. Now, let's go through some of the reasons why this could be concerning. It is absolutely true that well-funded intelligence agencies could have the resources to fabricate identities. So you think you're getting rid of the Russian bots or the Chinese trolls or whatever, because you say, hey, you got to prove to us that you're a real person in order to post. But some of these really well-funded governments can fabricate identities. They can fabricate IDs. They can have a robust way to fake that these are real people. At the same time, it's sort of like with gun safety regulations. No one rule will fix the entire problem. But if you have a robust verification system, you could do away with a bunch of this problem, but no system would be foolproof for sure. The other concern would be, you know, if you have a really robust identity verification system, dissidents are going to be placed in difficult and potentially dangerous situations when it comes to speaking out against an oppressive government. People who, for example, spoke out in Egypt during the Arab Spring, if you required identity verification, they might be scared to speak out, or in fact, they could be putting themselves at risk for speaking out. And so that's absolutely a concern, and it needs to be weighed in thinking about this. Now, there are some who say that this would be a free speech limitation, that you are quite literally violating people's free speech rights. First of all, if Twitter or Facebook did this, they aren't the government, so they would not be violating anyone's First Amendment rights, certainly. Companies can have whatever registration requirements they want. That doesn't violate free speech. The answer here to me is, I'm not sure that social media companies should be forced to do this kind of verification. And I don't think that you should be forced to post under your real name. But it doesn't sound like a bad thing for companies to say, hey, we need to know who you are based on our terms of service. And Haidt believes social media companies should be asking not only for some kind of identity verification, but also should be doing this in order to make sure that people under a certain age aren't on the platform, because that's really easy to do. You can still post anonymously or pseudonymously, but Twitter should know who you are and make sure that you are of a certain age. Many people on both sides of the political spectrum like that idea. Many people on both sides of the political spectrum don't like that idea. Personally, we have had situations where people threaten me in a credible way on these platforms. Not the, you're a loser, I hope I don't run into you on the street. Not talking about that. But we have had real threats on the platform where in some cases it took months for law enforcement to identify the people. In a couple cases, they eventually did, showed up at their houses, and federal cases were launched against them. But it took an insane amount of work to find people who were just issuing really horrible threats, people who in some cases seemed to have both the, let's call them the tools to carry out what they were threatening, and the motivation. And why as a society are we making it easier to deal with that? Seems like a problem. Pseudonyms, all for it. Anonymous posting, sure. But there are lots of good arguments for saying the platforms should know who is on those platforms. Let me know your thoughts. Neo-Nazis with swastikas marched through Madison, Wisconsin, yelling, "There will be blood." Can we now say the guys with the swastikas are anti-Semitic or are racist Nazis? Is it fair to say that, or are we still going too far and you don't know what they really believe? Here's a Daily Beast report from Allison Quinn. Neo-Nazis marched through Madison yelling, "There will be blood." They wore masks, of course. They marched through Madison on Saturday afternoon, waving swastikas, shouting racial slurs, and chanting, "There will be blood." This was two dozen men wearing red shirts, identifying themselves as members of Blood Tribe. This is a white supremacist group that has been trying to make a name for itself since 2021 by targeting Jews, people of color, and the LGBTQ community. Footage showed them standing in formation, performing a Nazi salute, while onlookers mostly mocked them and called them disgusting. They spent about 30 minutes outside the state house. The group reportedly also stopped in front of a local synagogue and chanted, "Israel is not our friend." Christopher Polhouse, a founder of Blood Tribe, who tried to set up a white supremacist haven in Maine, only to ultimately sell the property once it became public, was reportedly in attendance at the march. What did the local official say? Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway said, "Madison does not want or welcome hate groups like the one that invaded our communities today. I know how disturbing it was to see Nazi symbols openly displayed on our streets." So a few different things that I think that are worthy of comment here. First and foremost, I saw some comments saying this is a false flag. These are federal agents or something, informants or whatever. They're there just to make neo-Nazis look bad or something. Don't the neo-Nazis already look bad? Maybe they meant they're there to make the right wing look bad and make it seem as though the right is neo-Nazi or something like that. No evidence of that whatsoever. We are seeing historic levels of anti-Semitism. And as I've said before, if your reaction is it is deserved anti-Semitism because of what the Likud party in Israel is doing, that is really whacked. And I encourage you to call me when I take live calls. I would love to speak to you if that's your view. Now, when it comes to what should be done about the anti-Semitism that is exploding in the U.S., in Germany, in France, in so many different places. I don't actually have an answer. And there have been thousands of years of asking the question, what should we do about anti-Semitism? And to my satisfaction, the question has never really been answered. What we certainly don't need are claims that there isn't really an increase in anti-Semitism, or that if you care about supposed liberal values, you shouldn't be concerned with it. That's my real fear. I think it's completely fine to say, hey, you know what? There's anti-Semitism and there's also all this other stuff and we should care about all of it. Totally legit. However, if your motivation for talking about other things when anti-Semitism comes up is your antipathy for Israeli foreign policy or your unwillingness to recognize that anti-Semitism is first and foremost the number one form of religious hate crimes in the United States, or if you just don't want to recognize what's going on, then I do have a problem with that perspective. But if honest people want to say, OK, this is going on, but I'm not sure what we need to do about it and what the solution should be, that's absolutely a conversation worth having and one that we should be having. So it's disgusting. We're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it in different forms. Saying I am against the Israeli settlements in the West Bank, that's not anti-Semitism. Saying it and making assessments of world Jewry as a result and dismissing anti-Semitism because you don't like settlements in the West Bank, that just may be anti-Semitic. And in all honesty, I'm not joking when I say this. If you want to confront me about this, please call in when we take live calls on the Friday show. It'll be on the Wednesday show this week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. I would love to talk to you about it. Disgraced Republican Congressman George Santos will not be running for re-election. But before we even get to that story, I should tell you the latest completely outrageous revelations about his ridiculous uses of campaign funds. I know that this sounds like a joke. It does. The New York Times is reporting how Santos spent donors' money, Ferragamo, OnlyFans, and Botox. Botox. House ethics investigators found that Representative George Santos used campaign money on personal spending splurges in the Hamptons and Atlantic City. Over just a few days in November, Santos dropped $6,000 at Ferragamo, perhaps some of it on red designer sneakers he later wore in Congress. He withdrew $800 in cash at a casino where he liked to play roulette. He paid off his rent. He pulled out another $1,000 in spending money at an ATM near his apartment in Queens. These are just a fraction of the tens of thousands of dollars or more that he siphoned from unknowing donors for years, propping up the kind of glittering consumer dream he never thought he could have afforded for himself. Trips to the casinos in Atlantic City, purchases at Hermes, regular cosmetic treatments labeled Botox on internal campaign records, even small purchases. He's not spending a ton, but small purchases on OnlyFans, a platform best known for allowing creators to sell explicit photos and videos to subscribers, This apparently, so sticker, you know, headline, spending money on OnlyFans and Botox. Underlying all of this, a consistent, systematic fraud and level of dishonesty about his past accomplishments or lack thereof, his life, his family, his education, his athletic achievements, his professional achievements, etc. That includes even lying. Think about it. He lied about who he was to get people to donate to him. And then with the money that was donated, he used it for things like Botox and OnlyFans rather than for actual campaign expenditures. It's level after level after level of this stuff. Here's a funny video, by the way, on Fox News. This was a little while ago. He acted all surprised about, he only recently learned what OnlyFans was. Little did we know at this point, he actually spent money on OnlyFans.
Speaking of Peel, is it true that you have an OnlyFans page and you can peel a banana with your feet? I don't have one, and it's, you know, I'll indulge you this. I just discovered what OnlyFans was about 3 weeks ago when it was brought up in a discussion in my office.
What do you think?
And I was oblivious to the whole concept.
You just can't tell the truth. All right.
This seems like a skit, but I don't know that anyone would believe a word that comes out of this guy's mouth. And so where we get to now, at the culmination, at the peak of this house of cards that has been built on lies about who he is, lies about what he did, lies about where he was educated, lies about what he did with his campaign donations. After all of it, at the top of this pyramid is the realization that he can't win because he's horrible and that he will not be running for re-election. Let's talk about that next. George Santos, the disgraced, dishonest, delusional, depraved, and I would argue dilapidated Republican congressman from New York will not be running for re-election. Of course, his explanation for why he won't be running is typical poor me, I'm the victim sort of stuff, really Trumpian in its nature. Let's take a look at the statement. He put out a tweet on Twitter, which is now called X, so we call them excretions. And hard to have a better example of something that would accurately be labeled an excretion than this post, where he explains why he's not running. Quote, if there was a single source of ethics in the ethics committee, they would not have released this bias report. The committee went to extraordinary lengths to smear myself and my legal team about me not being forthcoming. My legal bills suggest otherwise. It is a disgusting politicized smear that shows the depths of how our federal government has sunk. So far, it's the ethics report is bad. Everyone who participated in this grave miscarriage of justice should all be ashamed of themselves. We, the people, desperately need an Article 5 constitutional convention. We're approaching $34 trillion in debt. The government is continuously on the verge of shutdown, blah, blah, blah. The time is now for the states to rise up and commence a constitutional convention. I've come to expect vitriol like this from political opposition, but not from the hallowed halls of public service. I will remain steadfast in fighting for my rights and for defending my name in the face of adversity. I am humbled yet again and reminded that I am human and have flaws, but I will not stand by as I am stoned. He's stoned now by those who have flaws themselves. I will continue on my mission to serve my constituents up until I am allowed. I will, however, not be seeking re-election for a second term in 2024, as my family deserves better than to be under the gun from the press all the time. Public service life was never a goal or a dream, but I stepped up to the occasion when I felt my country needed it most. I will 100% continue to maintain my commitment to my conservative values in my remaining time in Congress. One really funny question. Do we even believe he's not running? Like, he filed for re-election a while ago, and now he tells us he's not actually going to run. Do we even believe he's not running? Or is he going to go back on this? Is he never going to actually end the campaign? What is his actual plan? Now, let me be abundantly clear. This decision is about one thing and one thing only, which is the realization that he almost certainly cannot win. His constituents despise him. His constituents despise him. Republican groups in Long Island have denounced him. He is a joke in the halls of Congress. And now this report that says he was spending campaign donations on Botox, he was spending it on OnlyFans. Believe me, there are still Trumpists who would continue donating to this guy. But it seems as though he has realized he almost certainly will not win. If his view changes and suddenly he comes to think that he might actually have a shot, will he cancel his cancellation? He almost certainly will. But really taking a lesson from MAGA Trumpism, remember that this used to be at some point vaguely the party of personal responsibility. Don't blame other people for your actions. He did it all to himself. The lies, the fraud, the deception. And then layered on top of this are, of course, the criminal charges. This guy is facing couple dozen. It's hard to remember. I know Trump's 91 felonies. This guy, I think, was in the 20s or 30s. Some number, a couple dozen of felonies, criminal counts here we're talking about. And it's also possible that this guy's going to end up in prison, which, quite frankly, if that's what he deserves, remember, I don't go around saying lock him up, lock her up. If it is indeed what he deserves, I hope that they throw the book at him. So this could be, I mean, it's sort of a Greek tragedy in a sense. It's kind of like Trumpian stuff also, in that probably getting involved in politics was one of the worst business decisions Donald Trump could have made, as he now may lose his ability to operate a business in New York. The tragedy of George Santos, which he says is everyone's fault but his own. Let's see where we end up a year from now and see whether this guy actually ends his campaign. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. There's a conspiracy theorist, extraordinarily anti-Semitic, who calls in with vaccine conspiracies, Jewish conspiracies, etc. He goes by the name Total Control. We haven't heard from him for a while. He called back in. I'm going to warn you about the language in this voicemail. Listen to what this guy is on right now.
Yo, Pax, Total Control 871. What's up, man? 4-5, still alive. Zero shots, zero masks, zero any of that crap. And I'm still alive. All right, tonight I want to talk about what the f*** did you Jews do to the banking system for the little man, you know? Because I understand, you know, guys like you, la-di-da, you know, you've got it going on, and I'm sure you've got your own special interest rates, your own special f***ing everything, you know?
You know, the publicly available interest rates on savings accounts right now are really good. Why would I need some special Jewish interest rate when you can just get 5.25 or even more at normal online FDIC insured banks? Again, this guy's horrible. I mean, disgusting conspiracy theories, but also complete ignorance to the fact that anybody can go and get over 5% right
now. Radiohead creep, because you're so special, so f***ing special. Right, right. So, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm watching this episode of Little House on the Prairie, and granted, you know, because it's a period piece and they go to great details to keep it period. So it's like, what, the 1800s, and the banker quoted them like 2% for their savings account. 2%! Pax, I think you see where I'm going with this whole thing, man.
I have no idea where this guy's going.
And, you know, the average, you know, like I said, I get it. The super rich guys like you got your own special percentage, 4 or 5% or whatnot, and
anybody can get 5%. You don't have to be special.
Keep a minimum of 10,000, 100,000 minimums and all that jazz. But for schmucks like me, poor schmoes like me, paycheck to paycheck, you know, who are thinking about squirreling something away, I think it's something like, oh, my God, I checked like all the banks. Put it like this. If your interest rate starts with zero, then it's what comes after zero doesn't mean a damn thing. 0.0 whatever number, you know. A high interest rate is considered a number after the point, you know, but it still starts with zero.
All right. So anyway, this guy thinks, I mean, think about where we are. This anti-vax, anti-mask guy happens to also think that the Jews are hiding interest rates above 0.whatever% from them. But all he needs to do is go to any bank and get a CD or sign up for any online high yield bank account, and he could be getting 5%. There's even CDs in the 6%. Is it the Jews hiding the information from him, or do we simply have a crisis of lack of personal financial knowledge? And into that, you dump the anti-Semitism. Sad stuff. Sad stuff. We've got a great bonus show for you today. Texas is pushing some textbook publishers to remove material on fossil fuels. We have new January 6th videos released that are launching some wild new conspiracy theories from the far right. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is furious over the failure to impeach President Joe Biden. It might be nice to have something to impeach him for. I know that that's crazy. I know that that's such 1995 thinking or whatever, but it might be nice. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is furious. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. I hope you'll join me there. You can sign up at joinpacman.com and you will get instant access. We start today with what was a truly bizarre day in Washington, D.C. First, a confrontation, James Comer and Congressman Jared Moskowitz. As some of you know, Republican James Comer has seemed determined to find evidence against Joe Biden, whether it exists or not, for supposed criminal bribery, mob-like behavior. There's no evidence Joe Biden was engaged in any of this. But one of the data points that James Comer and others have pointed to is the movement of a few hundred thousand dollars between Biden family members, Joe Biden giving and then being repaid a loan. And this is the smoking gun, according to James Comer. Of course, that doesn't prove any kind of wrongdoing. It's a loan between family members. It was then reported, as I told you on Monday, that James Comer was involved in a very similar intra-family loan. And the argument that many have been making is whether or not this in general is evidence of criminality. If it's evidence that Joe Biden should be investigated, then by that very same standard, James Comer should also be investigated. Democratic Congressman Jared Moskowitz confronted James Comer about this during a hearing yesterday. Comer completely loses it. Take a look at this.
They went around and investigated all this bullshit that Ian Sams is trying to tell people that only dumb, financially illiterate people pick up on, and said that it was a shell company because it was an LLC. You're so financially illiterate that you think because something says LLC, it's a shell company. This company, which I financially disclose, has properties. Okay, it manages over 1,000 acres of land for hunting purposes. It owns different properties. I'm one of the largest landowners in my home area. Okay. I went to the bank and I borrowed money and I bought that land. I didn't get wires from Romania, China. My family doesn't get wires. Okay. Never loaned my brother money. Don't have an LLC. But you and Goldman, who is Mr. Trust Fund, continue to try
reclaiming my time.
No, I'm not going to give you your time back. We can stop the clock. You all continue to, you look like a Smurf here just going around and all this stuff. Now, listen,
Mr. Chairman, hold on. If we're not on time,
we can spew disinformation.
You have gone on TV and said the president did something illegal. You're doing stuff with your brother. The American people have the same questions. Why should they believe you? Why should they believe you? Why should they believe you? There's a different rule for the president. There's a different rule for you. Why should they believe what you're saying, Mr. Chairman? Why? You go on Fox News and say loans and deals are a way to evade taxes. We don't know that's what you're doing or not. We don't know. We have no idea. We're supposed to take your word for it. But when the president says something,
you've already been proven a liar, Mr. Moskowitz.
What's that?
You've already been proven a liar.
Who's proven me a liar? You?
Yes.
Your word means nothing, Mr. Chairman.
Go to my hometown. There's a camera crew there today, an opposition research crew there today.
Mr. Chairman, this seems to have gotten under your skin.
I'll pay for your ticket.
I think the American people have lots of questions, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps you should sit maybe for a deposition.
I will be happy. I will sit with Hunter Biden and Jim Biden, and we can go over our LLC.
So the point here is less about whether James Comer did or didn't commit a crime. It's about exposing the absurd hypocrisy and double standard in which it is abundantly clear that they are holding different people to different standards. When it's Joe Biden involved in an intra-family loan, it's part of the Biden crime family, bribery, impeach this guy, investigate this guy, whatever. when it's James Comer accused of the same thing, he says, oh, what are you talking about? This is opposition research. This is nonsense. This doesn't make any sense. Here's one more little clip from this exchange.
All I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is you may have done nothing wrong.
No, but you tweeted that I did.
I'm reclaiming my time, Mr. Chairman. There is a story out there, right? Because we believe everything in the media. Like when you go on Fox News and say things and everyone says that they're true with innuendos and ifs and maybe the Biden family, the crime family, all this nonsense. But yes. When it happens to you, it's fake news. And what I'm saying is there
so
should be the same.
No,
I'm reclaiming my time, Mr. Chairman. There should be the same standard. You said at the beginning of this hearing, the Biden administration can't have it both ways. Neither can you, Mr. Chairman. I yield my time back. Thank you.
Just treat everybody.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We need concrete action now. We need a humanitarian ceasefire now. We need unimpeded delivery of humanitarian assistance now.
As calls grow across the globe for a ceasefire in Gaza, we look at the unprecedented toll Israel's bombardment has taken on journalists. More than 50 journalists, almost all Palestinian, have been killed since October 7th. We'll speak to the Committee to Protect Journalists. Then the acclaimed Palestinian poet, Masab Abu Toha, has been detained at an Israeli checkpoint in Gaza, his whereabouts unknown. He spoke to Democracy Now! Last month.
So where do we go? And Netanyahu, on the second day of the escalation, said, ask the Palestinians in Gaza to leave. He said, leave now. But where do we leave and why should we leave? We have nowhere else to go.
We'll also speak to Vermont's only Congress member, Democrat Becca Ballant, who's become the first Jewish member of Congress to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. Then to Argentina, where the far-right political outsider, Javier Milei, has been elected president. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Palestinian Health Ministry says all hospitals in northern Gaza are now out of service amidst repeated assaults by Israeli forces on medical centers. The World Health Organization said it was working to evacuate remaining patients from Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in the besieged Palestinian territory, along with the Indonesian and Al-Ahli hospitals. Hundreds of patients, many of them injured in Israeli strikes, remain trapped in medical centers which have effectively ceased functioning. A WHO official in Geneva said Israel's assault is, quote, robbing the entire population of the north of the means to seek health care, unquote. There's been no let-up in Israel's bombing campaign. In one of the latest attacks, at least 20 Palestinians were killed when Israeli forces bombed the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Palestinian officials say more than 13,300 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli strikes, over 5,000 of them children. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres marked World Children's Day, the UN's annual Day of Action for Children, with a call to stop the carnage.
What is clear is that we have had, in a few weeks, thousands of children killed. So this is what matters. We are witnessing a killing of civilians that is unparalleled and unprecedented in any conflict since I am Secretary General.
The chairman of the Gaza Press House has been killed by Israel's military. Bilal Jadala was heading to the south of the Gaza Strip when he was killed by an Israeli tank shell in the Zeitoun neighborhood of Gaza City. Bilal Jadala was known as the godfather of Palestinian journalism. He helped train generations of reporters and welcome foreign correspondents to the Gaza Strip. In northern Gaza, 27-year-old digital content and podcast presenter Ayat Qadoura has reportedly been killed, along with her family, in an Israeli airstrike. This is one of her last video reports.
We're separated, of course. I and a few others remain at home while the rest have evacuated, and we don't know where they went. The situation is very scary. The situation is very terrifying. What is happening is very difficult. May God have mercy on us.
In southern Lebanon, two journalists with the Beirut-based TV channel El Mayadeen have been killed in an Israeli airstrike. The network says camera operator Rabi Al-Mimadi and correspondent